Let's dive into the soul groups that come from outside of our own solar system, starting with the Mintakans. Now, Mintaka is located in the constellation of Orion. And actually, it's funny because most Mintakans will recognize this constellation and will often find themselves looking at it in the night sky. It's very recognizable, but it's kind of funny that most Mintakans will actually know it. Now, Mintaka was a water world and somewhat utopian. And the thing is, on Mintaka, no one made conscious negative choices. And the big word here is conscious negative choices. So if they knew it was a negative choice, they just didn't make it. That didn't mean that people didn't make mistakes, all right? But conscious negative choice was just not something that existed. So Mintakans have a very hard time with the amount of willful, purposeful negativity on our planet. They don't understand choices like going to war, hurting others, lying, or intending to be mean to someone. They just don't get it. Their great gift is to see only the positive potential in others. And this makes us feel very good about ourselves. So Mintakans have a tendency to see your potential, and the way they see it and express it to you, it just makes us feel really good when a Mintakan upholds everything that we potentially could be. Now, Mintakans often have rose-colored glasses on. They focus on the positive side of life. The glass is always half full. Every cloud has a silver lining. And they are often very blindsided by other people's choices for negativity because they simply don't understand these choices. Mintakans don't have the capacity to make conscious negative choices. If they know it's wrong, they just can't do it. And it's kind of funny because a lot of lightworkers really resonate to Mintakans. Actually, a lot of students that come through here often think that they're Mintakan, even if you're not. So don't be surprised if you really resonate to the soul group. But Mintakans are definitely like the Pollyannas of the soul world. Everything's always positive. Oh, I'm sure they didn't mean it, right? They're really upholding everybody's potential for them. And look, you can do it. And they can be our cheerleaders. And, you know, they always look on the bright side. But they can get completely just astonished by other people's capacity to lie to them or cheat them and to like just make really willful negative choices. They just can't do it. And so they're constantly surprised and blindsided when other people do. And Mintakans really have to open their eyes to the reality of choice on our planet. You know, Mintakans tend to invest themselves heavily into other people's potential. They usually are everybody's cheerleader and the person others turn to when they need to feel good about themselves. And Mintakans really need to develop greater discernment between someone's potential and the truth of who they actually are, as evidenced by their choices and current consequences. You know, Mintakans have a tendency to take on people as projects. This is especially true of Mintakan women in romantic relationships. They tend to pick partners based on who that person wants to become or says they want to become versus who they are. So Mintakans have a tendency to surround themselves with people based on their potential and to pick partners based on their potential. And what I always tell my female Mintakan clients, it's like, partners, not projects. Partners, not projects. You kind of have to like get that into their brains, because when someone says, I'm gonna do this with my life, right? The Mintakan's like, yeah, I know you can. And then the other person feels great, but they don't necessarily do it. And a Mintakan is so invested in someone else's potential, they'll just keep cheering. And if they're in a relationship with that person, they will take on responsibility for helping that other person step into their potential. So Mintakans are great supporters. They always want everybody to fulfill their potential, and they will do whatever they can to make that happen. And very often the other person just sits back and goes, oh, this is nice. Thanks. And that's it. All right, so Mintakans really, in some ways, have to learn to be more judgy, okay? I tell a lot of Mintakan clients to be more judgmental, which is actually more discerning. But look at where people are. If you want to know about the quality of someone's choices, just look at the quality of their consequences, because guess what? They're a match. And even if someone has the potential to become this amazing person and create all these great results and look at what they say they want to be, their reality and their current patterns of choice are obvious in their current consequences. So Mintakans really have to learn to look at where people are right now, because that is the quality of the choices that they're making. See, and Mintakans tend to get involved with people who really need to be sort of uplifted into their potential. I mean, that's just where they are drawn, right? But if a Mintakan could just learn to see who people are right now. You know, there's that saying, when people show us who they are, believe them. Mintakans really need to believe them, because they see the potential of someone more than that person's reality. And when they go into a relationship with that person based on their potential, they will usually end up very exhausted and, quite frankly, disappointed. And often they put their own potential on the back burner for the sake of helping someone else step into theirs. So Mintakans really, it'll feel judgmental to them to really look at someone's situation and be like, oh, well, that's the kind of choices that they're making. Do I really want to get involved with that person? Do I want to get on that ride? And, you know, that feels judgmental to them, but it's really just exercising proper discernment. So Mintakans tend to overestimate others. Most people never step into their potential. They just enjoy being in the energy of someone who upholds it for them. So Mintakans can really end up highly disillusioned and very disappointed by others. But people do like being around them an awful lot, just because of their positive nature. They're always cheering. They're always saying, of course you can do it. But where Mintakans really have to test people is, okay, if I show you your potential, which is really their great gift, if I see this possibility for you and you're sitting across from me over coffee saying, oh my God, I could totally do that. I really want to. Then wait for 2 months. See if they take any action whatsoever. And if they don't, they've shown us who they are, and we have to accept that this is the amount of action they're willing to take on their behalf. And then we have to decide whether that's the person we want to have in our lives or not, based on their actions, not their potential. So Mintakans tend to give people 4 or 5 or 6 chances, sometimes more, even when they're being heavily taken advantage of, because they just don't expect it from others. Now, where Mintakans really have to focus is their own potential. And it's their job to leverage their ability to uplift others and bring out the best in them in a way that serves them rather than exhaust them, right? And there's so many transformational professions and so many opportunities where it can be our job or part of our job to see the potential for others, whether we're helping them in their business or helping them at work or helping them maximize profits or in, you know, transformational arena. I mean, there's a lot of opportunity where seeing the potential of a person or their situation can really serve them in a way that also serves us. And that's really where Mintakans have to take responsibility. This gift of being able to see the potential in every person and situation, they can leverage it, they can use it to really create value for themselves as well as for others. But structuring that properly, that's their responsibility. Now, the dysfunctional aspect of the soul group is a tendency to be a control freak. Mintakans are so invested in helping their partner or their family member step into the life of their dreams, they will try to make it happen for them, and they'll ignore their own potential, and they really will try to start managing everything and helping, you know, and helping when it's not wanted or requested is not really help. It's an attempt to control. And Mintakans really try to do that. And really, it comes from a place of wanting to serve, but it's dysfunctional because it really takes away from what they're here to do, which is to step into their own potential. And instead, they start micromanaging and taking on way more responsibility than it is their own. So their blindness to negativity can also be a way of abdicating responsibility for living in the world as it is. Metalkins have a tendency to live in a world that is as they think it should be. And, you know, reality and potential will collide. Reality always wins that battle. And then Metalkins end up very disillusioned. And some of them just, you know, they turn on the positivity even more. And they really go blind to the world. And next thing you know, they're broke, they're ill, and it's all because they've shut their eyes to reality as it is on our planet today. So Metalkins also have a great need for variety. That's just one of the soul level characteristics. They will have lots of different hobbies and interests, and they are natural jack of all trades. In fact, if you talk to your Metalkin clients and ask them whether they have lots of discarded hobbies lying around their house, they will start laughing at you, because they do, all of them. It's really funny. They'll start getting really into yoga, and then they'll be done with it. And then they'll get into quilting, and then they'll be done with it. And then they'll get into running, and then they'll be done with it. And that's a Metalkin way of expansion. They have this pattern that goes this way. So they'll try something new, they'll learn about themselves within that new experience, and then they'll integrate whatever they learn into the rest of their lives, and then the transformational value of that new hobby is just done, and they'll move on to something else. Now, sometimes that jack of all trades phenomenon can serve them a lot. In entrepreneurship, it's great. You have to be able to wear many hats, and they need to be in professions and professional situations where they get a lot of variety, where they have the opportunity to experience themselves in new ways all the time. Otherwise, they get really bored. Sometimes Metalkins should themselves, and they're like, I should be more focused. I should go back to, and they'll say they want to take up an old hobby because that hobby or interest once gave them a lot of value, but they just have to recognize that they're done with it. And the best thing a Metalkin can do is not invest too much in their hobbies, because they have to understand about themselves that their hobbies are phases, and it's okay. But we don't have to go around spending tons and tons of money on a phase, right? We can go to a certain level, and if we know we're going to discard it eventually, we can have fun with it, but let's not break the bank. And Metalkins just have to recognize about themselves that that's how they're made, and there's nothing wrong with it. They sometimes should themselves into stick-to-itiveness, and it's just not who they are. So you can really validate for them that it's okay, and that it's part of how they expand and grow, and to just let them have at it. Just, you know, don't spend all your savings on your new thing, because it's not going to last that long. Now, Metalkins also have an odd relationship with water. They will love being around it and in it, but some of them are also freaked out by dark water, such as the ocean or a lake, if they can't see their feet. Not all of them, but some of them really don't like it at all. Then they love being near water, but not in it. Now, the reason is because on their home world, sun and light was able to filter through to the bottom of the ocean. And so they were able to see. So on Earth, the dark water that you can't see through, they don't like it. But water is a very healing element for Metalkins. Although they could be like in a boat and be really happy, or be on a beach and be really happy, but some of them won't necessarily go in it. But to them, taking a bath or something is just very, very balancing. Even having a pool is balancing to a Metalkin, even if they don't go in it. It's really funny. A lot of them will like having a pool, but they don't necessarily go swimming. It's a very odd thing, but it is a balancing element that they like to have in their environment. Now, their home world is no longer inhabitable. We don't quite know what happened, but it just is no longer inhabitable. And so Metalkins often feel a strange, sad longing for home. They love being home. They love working from home. They tend to really be nesters. And sometimes they have this odd homesickness that's very misplaced. Because they are at home, but the more they can nest, the more they can make their environment their own, the better. Now, Polaris, these souls are our true north. That's what our Polarians are. They embody loyalty, constancy, and consistency. They are the people we always count on to be there for us. They are our rock. Polarians tend to stay in jobs, marriages, friendships, social groups, organizations for years and years, which is sometimes really beautiful, and sometimes it's not because they tend to stay longer than is good for them. They can be loyal to a fault, and they need to learn to be loyal to themselves first. So if Polarians turn that steadfastness towards themselves, they have so much integrity, and their decision-making ability becomes so congruent when they turn that loyalty to themselves. But most Polarians misplace their loyalty outside of themselves. And then they have a tendency to stick to situations, even when they've outgrown it, even when they should have gotten out 5 years ago, they will hang on to the bitter end. So you really want to talk to your Polarian clients about the gift of loyalty. Loyalty to self, it becomes a gift. Misplaced loyalty to others who don't really deserve it, not so great. So Polarians bring in the energies of oneness, wholeness, and unity. They have a talent for creating fantastic groups of people. Whether those are families or organizations or companies or clubs, they are just the glue that holds us all together. They're the family member that will host all the picnics. They are the friend that calls everybody to get together for game night. I mean, they really have this way of bringing people together. And at work, they love working within a team. They are great at team building. This is just what they excel at. They love inclusivity. Now, they love making decisions in committee with partners and coworkers and love all aspects of togetherness. So I have a good friend who's married to a Polarian. And I have to say, going out to dinner with them is challenging because there's this whole discussion. So what are you having? I don't know. What are you having? And then there's this long conversation where they decide together on their meal, and it takes like 10 minutes. And I'm just sitting there watching this. As the seventh energy center person I am, I'm like, what do I want? This is what I want. And that's the end of the discussion. But here I am with my Polarian friend, and everything gets done together, which to me just means it takes five times as long, but they love that. They love to be included, and it's all about togetherness. So Polarians are also slow to change their lives. They take a long time to consider big life changes, but once their mind is made up, they really move. So for Polarians, they tend to not make little incremental changes. They don't do well with that. They don't like change very much. They're very steadfast. But what they will do is contemplate a big move for years, sometimes longer than is necessary, to be honest, right? But when they've made up their mind, they will make one major life change in a big, big way. So for Polarians, transformation happens. It's like research, thinking about it, considering, and then boom, they move. And it's actually good to encourage them to make big, well thought out moves. Little incremental, like never try to get a Polarian to take little step-by-step baby actions. It just doesn't work for them. It's not who they are. And if you're working with a Polarian client long-term ever, for example, if you're also a coach, I mean, they're going to make you nuts unless you know this about them, all right? So help them really, really prepare and have plan A, B, C, and D in place, and that way they feel free to make a big, bold move. And they're really capable of that. Polarians just don't do well with slow, gradual, incremental transitions. Change is so hard for them. They're really best served by making big changes all at once. Now, the dysfunctional aspect of the soul group is definitely stuckness. I mean, they can become so entrenched in their current situation, in their way of thinking, their habits, and even their own plans. They can stubbornly insist on pursuing a path that is clearly not going to serve them. So if they're not that self-aware, and their ego gets attached to a certain self-image, even if that self-image has nothing to do with who they really are, their gifts, I mean, they can chew away on trying to create a perfect plan and trying to move towards that self-image and making that a reality for a decade. I have a Polarian friend who is not suited for entrepreneurship. He is just not. He is best as an employee. He's risk averse. It's just not his path. And he doesn't have the marketing or sales skills to really be able to pull it off. However, he has this idea of passive income. So he's forever trying to set up passive online cash machines, which, hello, don't even exist, which I've told him. But his self-image is so entrenched into this idea of financial freedom / passive income, he just will not let it go. And I mean, I've been watching this for a decade, and it still hasn't worked out. And yet, he still insists that it can, in spite of all evidence to the contrary. So this is where Polarians can get really stuck in their mindset, and it can really be detrimental to them. That's where it gets dysfunctional. So their ego just gets stuck on a particular self-image, even if it's incongruent and unproductive time and again. Now the North Star, which is of course Polaris, is an anchor of sorts in our firmament, right? We used to navigate by it. But the Earth's poles, the magnetic poles, have shifted and continue to do so. And Polarians feel this misalignment. It seems to contribute to their tendency to get stuck. It's as if they're attempting to ground the entire planet by keeping their lives exactly the same. Sometimes it's like, they're like, whoa, hold on, right? And it's almost like they're holding their breath. Don't everybody move, right? And that's how they live their lives. It's really interesting just because the Earth is changing. Now, sometimes this manifests as weight gain. Not always. It's not like all Polarians are overweight, but some of them, it's almost like they're trying to ground the planet by being physically heavier. It doesn't have to be like that, but it definitely is part of that stuckness phenomenon that they find themselves in from time to time. Polarians are also affected by major geographic events and seismic shifts that affect the Earth's plate movement. They're very unsettled by it just because the way the magnetic lines, the energy lines, ley lines, I think, work with the planet, you know, if there's an earthquake or whatever, Polarians can be a little out of sorts. It's okay for them to be aware. It's not okay for them to use it as an excuse. Right? Oh, there was an earthquake, so today I'm not doing anything. We don't want to promote excuses for stuckness, right? So just, you can don't focus on it with them. Don't romanticize it. It's something that's good for them to know about because they may find themselves going, why am I so out of sorts today? And it's like, oh, big earthquake, big tsunami. Okay, moving on, right? That's all. That's all. We don't want them to use it as an excuse to not move. You know, sometimes people do that with things like Mercury in retrograde. I mean, for crying out loud, right? It's like, oh my God, I can't launch my new product. I can't do this. Why? Mercury's in retrograde. It's an excuse. It really, really is. So don't let this serve your Polarian clients as an excuse to not move forward towards their goals. Now let's talk about the Palladians. They are our natural change agents. This is a totally different energy from Polarians, who are very steadfast, can get very stuck. Palladians, they're like, what can we change? All right? They are very high energy, let's just shake things up kind of people. They are very active as visionaries, teachers, and they are very powerful communicators. They tend to be highly verbal people, even if they're not fifth energy center. Now, if you've got a fifth energy center Palladian, you're never going to be able to shut them up. They talk more than I do, okay? But you'll find Palladians who have different energy centers, and they're still very verbal people. If you met them, you would think they're fifth energy center. It's not. It's really actually a soul group characteristic. They are big on communication, and especially communication that changes minds. Their motto is to just do it. Nike must have been founded by a Palladian. Seriously, they are unafraid of change. In fact, they like to jump in with both feet and go really, really quickly. Now, they are our big picture visionaries. The thing is, they have a tendency to create a vision so grand that it is not implementable. I mean, it's just very impractical. Interim steps are tedious and cumbersome to a Palladian. They just want to get to their ultimate goal in a single step, meaning that they often never get started. I mean, I've sat down with Palladians where I'm like, okay, what's your intention in the next 6 months? And they're like, I want to have 10 healing centers worldwide where people can come and you know, this vision, and they go on and on for 10 minutes about the vision. It's like, okay, do you have people who are going to run these for you? Do you have a team? Do you have even an online version of that? Do you have any part of that? No. But I know it's going to happen. I can see it. Okay, what do you need next? I need to raise $5 million in capital, and I just know I'll meet that person. It's like, well, meanwhile, no business background whatsoever, right? They think someone's just going to hand over $5 million so they can make their vision a reality. I mean, that is a typical and very dysfunctional, by the way, version of what Palladians are capable of. They can really create these giant visions, but when it comes to the actual implementation, they're like, boring. They just don't like it. And that's okay. This is who they are. They just have to make sure that they put themselves into situations where the step-by-step implementation is not their job. They need to be the visionaries. They need to be the big talkers and communicators. They do great at sales, by the way, because they can paint a client a picture of everything that they could be. They can sell them and then move on to the next person. But when it comes to actually integration and implementation, step by step, no, this is not their gift. It really isn't. They need a team to handle that for them, or they need to just, that needs to not be part of their path. They love to communicate, and they inspire others with their big vision. I mean, really, they can paint a big picture for other people that gets us excited. They are also amazing at leading a community and are great motivational speakers and writers. And I mean, I've watched them in action. There's one entrepreneurial community I'm a part of, and the CEO is such a Palladian soul. And he will spin a big vision for people, and they totally buy into that. Never mind that the big vision isn't necessarily practical, and he doesn't actually give them he doesn't walk through it with them on the implementation, right? He just gets them excited about the vision. But that excitement about a vision can really inspire a community and pull it together, which is exactly what he's been doing for probably 30 years. So this is a skill set that is extremely valuable. But Palladians have to give themselves permission to stand in their gift and leave the rest to other people. They are very charismatic and charming. They frequently love being the center of attention. And while they're great visionaries and communicators, detailed implementation just needs to be delegated. Now, the other thing is they like to skip steps whenever possible. And this is how they end up sabotaging themselves, because they end up going for a quick fix. They take shortcuts. Sometimes those shortcuts are not above board. All right, this is something you have to understand about Palladians. There's a lot of positive Palladians out there. There's also a lot of really manipulative, negative Palladians out there. This soul group is divided about half and half between positive and negative souls. They really are. So the dysfunctional aspect of the soul group is manipulation. In their desire to go fast and skip the boring small steps, they use people as a resource or a shortcut to get where they want to go. I just recently heard from an acquaintance that I used to be friends with. He's Palladian. I did a little business deal with him, and I got completely screwed over. And just recently, he calls out of nowhere, leaves me a 6-minute voicemail. Palladians love to communicate. Charming voicemail. Oh, I don't know what happened. I'd really like to mend our friendship. I've got a few things going on I'd love to share with you. And my red flag is like, oh, he wants me to promote some product launch. That's why he's reaching out. He did not just think of me. They see people as resources. And that's okay too. If it's a win-win and an even and equal value exchange, why not do business together, right? But where it goes off track is that they can use people and manipulate them. And they're so charming and such great communicators that they can really, I mean, they're great salespeople. So they can really sell ice to Eskimos. So they have no problems elaborating the truth or spinning a good story to get what they want from others. And they have a way of justifying the means they use to get to their goals. They do orient themselves negatively with great frequency. I mean, they're good at getting people's attention. And therefore, they're very good at having other people direct energy towards them, which is why quite a few of them are negative. And they spin such a good yarn that they can manipulate others. And, you know, it just is what it is. Now, that's only half the soul group, right? The other half is beautiful and positive, and they can really use their communication skills and visionary skills to uplift people, to inspire them, and to really bring out the best in them. And they are change agents. So they really inspire people to change their lives. And so when they are positive souls, they can do amazing things in the world. And if they work with the negative orientation, they can become extremely good at manipulating people. So you just have to understand that this soul group is really 50-50 between both polarities. They've also worked out a way to leave Earth for other star systems by executing a karmic dump, where they basically convince other Palladian souls to take over their karma for completion here on our planet. I don't exactly know how that works, but they do it. And I know they do because sometimes you'll find a Palladian with negative unjustified karma that is not even their own. They just happen to be the poor schmuck who got suckered into holding karmic responsibility for another. So I don't even know how energetically they finagled this, but this is what Palladians sometimes do. They find a shortcut. If there is a way to shortcut universal law, trust a Palladian to find it. Right? That just gives you an idea of what this soul group is like. I mean, they're charming and fun, and you gotta be a little careful. There's another Palladian friend of mine. She's also just a very inspirational speaker, but a mutual friend of ours, you know, I said, you know, it's like having a pet shark. You just, you can love them, and they're so beautiful and so charming and have so much light, but you gotta be a little careful because you can get bitten. So that's all. Just get to know your Palladians. See whether they go into manipulation. And if they do, just be aware. That's all. But they're lovely, amazing, inspiring people to be around. That's the thing. Just don't get suckered into implementing for them without getting paid, because they can do that. So if you find negative unjustified karma, which we'll talk about in a later lesson for a Palladian soul, it's really worth checking to see if the karma is actually their own or if they agree to take it on from another Palladian. So let's also talk about the Perseians real briefly, because we don't actually have a lot of information on them. They're a bit of a mystery. They're very drawn to allowing solar energy to nurture their bodies. The practice of Pertharianism comes from the soul group, in case you've never heard of that. Supposedly, it's a way where just people only live on oxygen. They no longer eat. And breatharianism is a thing that I guess yogis used to practice, where they just receive all their nutrients from the air around them. That's a Perseian practice. That's something that they brought onto our planet, because they have this way of working with air and sun. They're very drawn to sunshine. They love to be outside. They need a great deal of light to flourish. And they often have very thin bodies. Often they have these really mesmerizing eyes that seem to have a lot of depth to them. There's actually quite a few Perseians here where I live in sunny Arizona, because we have so much sunshine and heat here, and they are really drawn to this environment. Perseians ended up on Earth somewhat accidentally. They feel quite aimless on our planet. What happened was that their own planet ended up kind of adopting an isolationist policy where they were like, you know what, that's it. No more souls going in or out. We're done. It's like they closed their borders energetically. The thing is, there were still quite a few Prasayans elsewhere, and now they couldn't go home. So they just sort of floated around and ended up here. So they never really intended to come here. They're a little bit like Martian and Maldekian souls that way. They're a little lost and don't really feel like they have their own purpose for being here. So they don't have a clear connection to that sense of purpose. And what they often do best at is supporting others. They are really drawn to people who have a clear sense of direction and purpose, and actually, they can create a lot of abundance by being in a supporting role. Because visionaries and people with a clear sense of direction and purpose need supporters. Supporters is different from followers, right? And they can sometimes end up being in the role of follower versus supporter, where they're just following. That's not a value exchange. Whereas when you support someone, they also support you, and you can be in an even and equal value exchange. So that's really where Prasayans belong. But it really is great for them to work with a CEO or a transformational leader who has a clear sense of direction, clear vision, and Prasayans will be incredibly drawn to that. The problem is if they're in a follower role, that they tend to follow gurus and kind of buy into anything and everything. Just because someone has a clear sense of direction and purpose doesn't mean that what they're saying is, first of all, actually true. They just really, really believe it. And secondly, you know, they can be taken advantage of when they're in that follower role versus being a supporter who also receives value for the support that they offer. So a lack of direction is the dysfunctional aspect of the soul group. They may also try to make others responsible for giving their life meaning and purpose, and that can lead to a lot of codependency within relationships. I mean, they can just get really attached to someone where they feel like, oh, this is who I'm going to hitch my wagon to. And they'll call that love. They'll want to be in that follower slash supporter role, but really to that other person, it feels like they're just sort of glomming onto them and it doesn't feel good to them, right? When someone else looks to us for their meaning and direction and purpose in life, that's a little much. We don't like it. And so Prasayans sometimes really just get way attached into relationships. I'm not saying they're necessarily stalkers, but they could go there. All right, they can get a little obsessive, a little like where you're like, whoa, back off, right? And they don't understand what's wrong with the intensity that they're bringing into that relationship. So that's definitely something you can talk to your Prasayan clients about, that, you know, yes, support someone with a clear sense of direction, but make it an even and equal value exchange, no matter what kind of relationship they're in.